I am transfigured. I express my original purity and integrity. Yesterday, we said, I am transformed. And I am transformed is a beautiful word, too. It's a word of power and dignity. It's a word of magic and materialism, basically. It's a word of humanness and of consciousness on the human level of thinking. To be transformed and transmogrified is to be changed from a frog into a man or a man into a frog, like the prince, you know. So those sort of stories. But to be transformed oftentimes is referred to as something quite physical. Quite physical, which of course is something we're going through too, but quite physical in its totality, and you come out a better physical being, a better human being. And it's a terrific term. But as I was looking up the words, which happened to follow after one another in the dictionary, the word transfigured jumped out as a synonym for transform, and it was an additional phrasing along with it. And it said that transfigured is when you are illumined from within for a higher direction in your life. And I thought, gee, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. As you read it, you probably read it with different words, but basically that's the interpretation I got out of what it said. It said a transfiguration is when you are illumined into a higher state of awareness. And I can interpret that any way I like, of course. That's what my imagination is for. And that's what your imagination is for. But Jesus experienced a transfiguration, and that was the illumination into his true spiritual consciousness, which was there all the time. But you know, let's just dwell upon Jesus for a few minutes here. We've all got a hang-up about him. We like him or we don't like him. We want to worship him or we don't want to worship him. We want to respect him or we don't want to respect him. Or we want to bring him down to our level by saying he did things that the normal human beings would have done. But one of the things that all of you have done in your interpretation of Jesus the Christ is to say that Jesus the man, as he was revealing himself, was fulfilled, that he was revealed, that he was the ultimate. And I keep telling you that's not true. That's not true. If he's the ultimate, he's not going to play games anymore. And when did he become the ultimate? He became the ultimate when he said to his disciples and to the rest of the world, look, you're leaning on me too heavy. I'm not having much fun living this way. You're throwing all of your garbage at me. I'm really not too happy with it. I'm going to leave you so that your personal comforter can come. So the comforter can come in each of you, which is your divine reality. He said that so clearly and so beautifully, and yet we ignore it. And so then, when it came time for his transfiguration, when do you think it was? Do you think it was before the crucifixion or after the crucifixion? Before the crucifixion, he didn't change. He was a great guy.
Yeah.
Before the crucifixion, right? He didn't change.
When he appeared
After the crucifixion, before the crucifixion, he says, I must go so I can show you the last enemy that man is going to overcome is death. And then he went through the experience, and then he reappeared, transfigured. His transfiguration was the ultimate of what he could do for himself as a human being in a human form. And who was it who messed him up?
Thomas.
Thomas says, you haven't got any holes in you, you know. How can we be sure you're the Christ? He says, okay, I'll go back to the drawing board. And he appeared the next few moments, and then he had the holes in him. And we can appear with anything. It doesn't matter. But the thing is, when we appear with anything, it's because we forgot. No. Do you think Jesus, the transfigured being, remembered the crucifixion? Not in the slightest. Do you think he remembered his disciples as not quite having made it? Not at all. Do you think he saw the world in turmoil? Did you think he saw the Roman Empire messing up the Jewish nation? Do you think that he saw all these things? No way. What did he see? He was being himself and having fun. None of those things bothered him one little bit. Not one little bit. After his transfiguration. Before it, it didn't bother him, but he gave it attention, remember? Mm-hmm. He gave it attention, so you just cannot say that he didn't give it attention. He gave it attention. And so, in giving it attention, what happened? He was aware of it. Now, if he were totally oblivious to it, what would happen? They, or those experiences, would not happen in his awareness. Make sense? Those things that were not totally harmonious would not happen in his awareness. And the reason they would not happen in his awareness is because he was in bliss. He was living on another level of awareness which did not include those things. It did not include any of that sort of nonsense. It was pure and beautiful and fantastic and glorious. Now, where do we stand on this wonderful journey? Where do we stand? Are we ready for having this transfiguration? I don't say we have to die. Jesus didn't say he had to die either. He said he showed that the last enemy that man would overcome was death. That was what he was teaching. He was teaching this, and so he demonstrated it. Now, I'm not teaching that. I'm teaching be yourself and have fun right here and now and enjoy every second of your life. You're here to have a great adventure, a great thrill, whatever it may be that delights you and thrills you. Enter into it. Enjoy it. That's what I'm sharing with you. That's my whole purpose in sharing with you. I'm not sharing with you the last enemy you'll overcome is death, because that's already been done. I'm not sharing you that you have to have illness, or you have to have unhappiness, or you have to have bad relationships in your life, because that's a growing tool. No way. You don't have to stub your toe. Why is it that you're happy when you don't stub your toe? if you were happy when you stubbed your toe, then you have to stub your toe. And why is it when you hear of someone who has a difficulty, and you say, oh my God, that's tough. And then you go up to them and say, you know, you're a master. You handle that very well. And here the guy's laying in a hospital bed with all sorts of problems. You handle that very well. You came through that with flying colors. I did? You know. Yeah, you're a master. You played the game, but it didn't let it take you. You didn't let it destroy you. You came and you're ready to live another day, to perform another day, to put your show on another day. You're fantastic. I hadn't thought of it that way. But you see, we don't think of things the way they really are. When you have a spiritual healing, as I've always said, when you have a spiritual healing, and it is done, whatever was done, you do not remember what was wrong with you. You do not remember where your problems are. Now, people play games with short-term memory. They say, people have difficulty with short-term memory. It means they're getting old. Well, is that true? People getting old? No way. No way. You young people, do you ever forget anything? Of course you do. Regularly. Do you forget somebody's name? I'd like to introduce you to my mother. Her name is you know? I was introducing my dad at a Rotary Club one time, and I said, this is my dad. Oh, it's the same name as mine, you know. But I went blank because I was in such respect for my dad and in such love for him and admiration for him. Poof, you know, everything was gone. And I said, did you guys ever have an experience like this? And, you know, they looked, yeah. And I said, anyhow, this is my father. His name is Herbert Frank Byerly. Really Franz, but Herbert Frank Byerly, and I'm Herbert Leonard Byerly, and we're a good team. He's an exquisite man. I worked for him all through high school and college and stuff like that, and you know, then they told a lot of stories, and my dad was sitting there, okay, that's interesting. That's interesting how you tell these stories. That's interesting. Who did I kiss who had the hair in their mouth? Oh, the dog, of course. during our Om, you know. But we have this realization now that we can have a transfiguration without having to die. We can be transfigured without dying. We don't have to die to be transfigured. It's a state of illumination. It's a state of inner bliss, inner awareness, and it just blossoms out. And when it blossoms out, it just knows no end, and it just encompasses your whole world. And then you are a different person. And you don't remember the person you were before, which is wonderful. Now, you may remember your parents and your family or your world, if that is important to you. You may remember that, and you may be gentle and loving with them. But they'll say, "My goodness, Heinz, you're different. I don't know what's different about you, but you're different." And you say, "Well, Mom, I tell you, I've been doing some work on my inner self, and I kind of like myself, and I kind of like the world, too. I'm real happy." "Well, Heinz, all I can say is, I like the way you are. I like the way you were before, too, of course, you know, but I like the way you are. I like it very much." And you think to yourself, "Pff," you know, but you see, if it were a put-up, if you were pretending, then you would say, "I wonder if I'm getting my message over. I wonder if I'm fooling her. I wonder if she believes that I'm always happy, that I'm always filled with happy thoughts and good experiences. I wonder if she really believes that." Well, you see, when you have had the experience, you don't care what anyone believes or doesn't believe. You just are yourself and having fun. If someone believes it, super. If someone doesn't believe it, super. Makes no difference. So this is what entering into this high state of consciousness of bliss does. You don't have any care for what people's opinions are, what people's attitudes are, what people's, you know, needs and wants and hurts and happinesses are. All you care about is to be yourself and have fun and to look out on the world with your love-filled eyes and only see love out there. For when you look out with your love-filled eyes and only see love, then you can readily say, "I am transfigured." And then you can readily say, "I express my original purity and integrity." I express my original purity and integrity. Now, this is not complex, but it is so contrary to our previous thinking, and our thinking right now, in fact, it's so contrary to it that we want to confuse it. We want to insert different words there. But you see, I am transfigured. That means I am illumined. I have listened within in my introspection and my meditation, and God and I, as one, have a perfect connection. And God shines out through me. I don't want to say channel for God, because I am God. But my body, oh, there you go. My body is a channel for God, just like it's a channel for this Herbert that thinks he lives in there, too. But I don't live in there. I'm just renting that car. And my real car is quite different. Now, what is my real car? I express my original purity and integrity. I express my original purity and integrity. The original purity. Not just my purity, which my mind wants to say is maybe good, maybe not, you know. But when you're original, as Ellen would like to say, archetypal, and as Sylvia would like to say, absolute. We all know each other's little foibles and puns, but that's true. My absolute purity and integrity, but absolute tries to be an adverb or adjective, and we don't want that. But original, it is an adjective, true, but it is a placement adjective. It places it into the realm of absolute consciousness, and that's a beautiful thing. Whereas if we just say, I express my purity, you know, you see, what we have made a mistake with our life, among a million, billion, zillion other things, which don't really matter. Heinz was saying that he's learning to to look for those things that are making him unhappy and then plant a new cause in motion. Don't look for those things that made you unhappy. Don't empower them by giving them a second glance, by giving them a second opinion, by giving second attention. Rather, what do you want to experience? You're experiencing a headache and you don't like the headache. You say, oh my God, what did I do to bring on this? Oh, I was thinking about that problem. Oh boy, and there it comes again. You know, the headache just re-postulates itself. It exaggerates itself so fantastically that it just blows our mind. Well, now, we don't want that. So, if we have a headache, we say, I am peace. I am peace. That has nothing to do with the headache. I am peace. I am peace. That has nothing to do with the headache. The headache is still there. I am peace. 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 And pretty soon, you stop thinking about the headache, and you think about the peace. You give your attention to the peace, and out comes the peace. Perfect, wonderful, beautiful. Is there a place for a headache in a peaceful world? No way. Is there a place for a headache in a being who is peaceful? No way. You see, we don't want to search out the problem so we can find the solution. We know we have a problem and we don't like it, and so we put a solution which is its contrary. And when we put the solution which is its contrary in motion, then that's what we get. Can you see how powerful that is and how beautiful that is? Can you see how important that is for our world and our life, that we handle ourselves in a harmonious way? Now, I've always found that my rebels were my best students. People who came to me as a rebel and didn't want to take the course. They didn't want this. They didn't want that. All they want to do is listen to me talk and talk with me about what I'm saying and maybe argue a little bit with me. But they don't want to do it. They don't want to do this. They don't want to do that. And, hey, I have never tried to sell my courses. I have never pitched my courses. Ellen does that or somebody else does it. I don't pitch them. But everything I say is in my courses. And if you take the courses, you'll find it there. And if you don't find it there, maybe I've gone a little beyond what the courses were suggesting. But isn't that wonderful? Okay, now. Think for yourself. Think in your own inner awareness. As I said, people who came to me, rebels, turned out to be my finest students because they got it all out of their system in the beginning. And then when they got aware of what the course could do for them, then they just said, wow, wow, wow. And that's great. Or people come to my lectures and they find them hard to take. Like Ellen. She came to the lecture in Germany in the Laborio.
Bigorio.
You know, short-term memory. Bigorio. No way. And when she came to Bigorio, she was a fancy lady. She was wearing her fancy clothes and all her fancy duds. And then she sat down with her other fancy friends who were there too, with their fur coats in, I think it was summertime. And their fur coats, it wasn't cold. I had my shorts on and my sandals on and my t-shirt on. And I wouldn't have my sandals, shorts, and t-shirt on if it were cold, because I like to snuggle up too, you know. But we were in this monastery, and it was cold walls and all that stuff, but they were wearing their fur coats, and they were chatting between each other, and Ellen was distracted by them, which was the purpose of those ladies doing that, of course. And so then Ellen says, well, now, I'm not staying here tonight. I don't stay in any place but my own home, you know, or a hotel, first class, and stuff like that. And so she went home, and yet the medical doctors and these fancy ladies, they all stayed. Everybody stayed. And in the morning, we all had a wonderful time. Ellen finally came back in the morning and attended the program and decided that, hey, maybe I'm missing something by not getting the whole shebang, evening as well as morning, you know. And so that was what that's all about. And she became one of our most devoted students, one of our most devoted friends, and one of our most expanded consciousnesses that we've ever had. If you want anyone to lecture for you spontaneously on any subject, just ask Ellen. If you give her time to plan it, she'll mess up. But if you don't give her any time to plan it, it just comes to her just like the wind out of the north, you know, just the south, really warm and nice, but just lovely. And everyone is just, see what it's all about, unless you're so fascinated.
And I don't hear that.
Well, you'll have to listen to it afterwards. I've always said make the phone so that they don't function for the period that we have our lecture. And we're doing okay. We're 20 minutes. It's not, you know, we did a lot in 20 minutes. We did a lot in 20 minutes. But now think of this. Each one of you are ready to put the cause in motion to have this wonderful statement manifest in you right now. Don't try for it. Just prepare your mind to accept that it's possible. And as you prepare your mind to accept that it's possible, it takes place. And when it takes place, it just boggles your mind. It just sends you off into fields of imagination that you could never have dreamed about. But as it happens, you don't remember that you were ever without that awareness. You just don't remember that. You always realize that you are you, and you are fantastic. And you don't let anyone else touch you. You don't let anyone else manipulate you. You don't let anyone else appeal to you. You don't even have a husband or a wife. Hey, that's not too cool, is it? But you don't. You may have a relationship, but you do not have a possessionship. You see, with a possessionship, then you really have a problem. With a relationship in which you're together and you're being good friends and you got married or you did this or that, hey, that's okay. But the minute you need her or you need him, the minute you need each other, then the relationship is over and possessionship has taken over. And it's no fun anymore. It's absolutely no fun anymore, because nothing good comes out of it. Nothing good comes out of it. I get so relaxed here, I drop the microphone down into my lap. But it still comes through very good. So, I am transfigured. I express my original purity and integrity. I am transfigured. I express my original purity and integrity. I am transfigured. I express my original purity and integrity. And when you say this repeatedly to yourself, this doesn't wipe away the past, okay? It does not wipe away the past. It opens up the present. We are so bogged down by our past that we can't enjoy the moment. I'll say to Ingeborg, look here. Ingeborg, pay attention here. And then I say, Ingeborg, I'm setting up your new computer. Oh, good, good, good. And she reads the stuff before I even read it on there. And so then I say, this says this. And she goes, no, it says this. You know, oh, good. And so then I have her take down the numbers. And I should have had her do it herself. And that would have been just fine. But I did it for her. But I had her attention. I had her wonderful attention on her birthday present. Of course, it belongs to the university, but it's hers to use and her joy. Everybody who gets a gift from anybody else around here, it belongs to the university, and they can use it, but it belongs to the university because we have no possessions. We have no ownership. We don't own anything. We use things and enjoy them. Anita, what do you use and enjoy?
Everything.
Anita thinks that the tractor belongs to her, you know, because she's driving it all the time, and the tractor loves her very much, and she loves the tractor. But the thing is, if somebody else wants to come along and drive it, go for it. Huh? You want to go drive the tractor? Go for it. Whatever appeals to you, whatever turns you on. Just be yourself and have fun. And Anita's not going to say, who's on my tractor? Now, Ingeborg might fall in the trap of saying, who's sitting at my birthday computer? And which is not that. Her birthday computer has how many names on it of possible users, Ingeborg?
Five.
And what are those names?
Those which are here.
Yes, everybody here. Yeah. And that's wonderful, huh?
Yeah.
So you see, it's everybody's computer. Ingeborg has just taken her birthday gift and made it available to everybody. Isn't she wonderful?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a step. That is a step in consciousness, a step in awareness, a step in letting go. She's not going to be possessed by it. I do think she's going to probably spend more time at it the next day or so than normally, because it is a beautiful attraction and she will want to learn some of its nuances. And we'll all show her the nuances so she'll have them enjoy it. But it is great. It is really great. So let's all make this statement. I am transfigured. I express my original purity and integrity as many times a day as possible. Keep your little slip with you to remind you what it is, because a statement, you know, they have the Ave Maria, they have the, Hail Mary in the church?
Ave Maria.
Hail Mary, Mother of God, at this time of my concern, I turn my attention over to you. Don't you know that? You were Catholic. Huh? There you go. Yeah, I mean, it's a common phrase. Now, that's powerful. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, the kingdom come. You see, we get so we don't pay attention to the words. We don't pay attention to the intent. We don't pay attention to the meaning. Oh God, lead us not into temptation. Well, what kind of a God are you praying to that would lead you into temptation? What kind of an evil God is that? Sounds satanic to me. You know? Leave us not in temptation. Lead us not in temptation. How could he leave us in temptation? We aren't even there. How could he lead us into it? We're not even there. You see, these are things that we should listen to the words of these prayers. In the Hail Mary prayer, it's a glorious prayer. It has a lot of power to it, a lot of joy to it, a lot of rhythm to it. And it's what people say when they kneel down and do their genuflecting in the church in their preparation for approaching the altar and the different things. And hey, that's glorious. That's glorious. That's part of the faith. It's part of the religion. It's part of the program. And as long as that's your program, go for it. Now, what is our program? And I'm telling you to go for it. Our program is, do not have one negative thought in your mind. Do not speak one negative thought. Do not think one negative thought. Do not let one negative thought be spoken in your presence. Da, 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 da. And of course, you all are totally in charge of that, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's work on it. Let's work on it. You see, that's what this teaching is. This teaching is the statement of Jesus, which is tough, a real tough statement. Be ye therefore perfect, even as is your Father which art in heaven. We're supposed to be perfect like God. Well, what do we believe God is? Good question for us to come up with the answer. So, I think we can say, I am transfigured. I think we can say that. I think we can say, I express my original purity and integrity. How I was archetypally, originally designed, or how I designed myself out of the infinite allness to be as an original concept, I can conceive that. And I can conceive that it's very nice. Very nice. Very, very wonderful being. A very warm, sensitive, caring being who is untouched, but cares lovingly. Why would I like to give things away all the time? That's a caringness. That's not needing things. That's being untouched. Can you all handle that? What if Heinz went home to the living room and he went to sit in his favorite easy chair, and you do have a favorite easy chair, and somebody had been there while you were gone and it was smoking cigarettes there, and they left a cigarette in the chair and it went up in flames, and they got it out before it ruined the rest of the house. But the chair went whoosh, My chair! My chair! My chair! Would he say that? No. But he might think it for an instant, maybe. My chair! Who did that to my chair? And it would be a shock. It'd be surprising. It'd be, you know, just sort of melted down in place. Wouldn't hurt the rest of the house, wouldn't leave any smell or any stench or any burning smell or anything else like that in the house, but we are possessed by it. Now, Ellen said, as I moved her into the embassy and I moved into the Hermitage, she says, Herb, I'm going to clean off that white chair for you so that it's nice and you can move it into the Hermitage. And I said, Ellen, the blue chair in the Hermitage, your blue chair in the Hermitage is perfectly okay for me. And she said, well, I wanted to make it nice. The chair lifts your feet up and so on. I said, Ellen, your blue chair is perfectly okay with me. Now, what am I saying? Possession. With perhaps subliminal, perhaps not subliminal, but it's possession. And we are all possessed by little things. Now, if I took the skirt that Anita's been wearing today with all the pretty brown and colors to it, and if I were to put a match to it, what would she say? My goodness! And then she'd bite her lip and she'd say, I know there's a lesson in here for me. I know there's a lesson in here for me. You see, but we're possessed. And we don't want to be. We don't want to be. Sylvia, she's possessed by her moo-moos. She still thinks of herself as being heavy. She still thinks of herself as being fat, and she is. She is still fat, and she will never be thin until she changes her mind about herself. When Sylvia says, I am beautiful and thin, I am beautiful, whatever she wants to say, I don't care, but I am beautiful, she will always be fat. Now, she's not a bad fat. I mean, when Sylvia wears dresses and things nicely, she looks quite charming. But when she doesn't, she has a little bit of fat. And she knows it. And so that's why she throws the moo-moo over. It hides everything. You don't know if she has or hasn't. But if I were to take all her moo-moos away, and I have been tempted many times to do that, I wonder how she'd survive. And if I took her bras away from her, you know, she says her doctor says she should wear those bras, and I guarantee you the doctor didn't say that. The doctor said, your breasts are now transformed. You get the message, not transfigured, but transformed. And they are beautiful. Well, fine, you know. They're pleasant-looking breasts. But the thing is, my goodness, this is on the internet, too. the thing is, we're possessed by the old Sylvia. See, she's possessed by the old Sylvia. She's not possessed by the new Sylvia, the glorious being that she is, which is not a good possession either. But she is just not aware of it and not claiming it. Now, what are you doing, Heinz? What are you doing, Ingeborg? What are you doing? Well, Ingeborg, we got you ready. What are you doing, Cynthia? And Ellen, we got you ready too. Well, what are you doing? What are you being possessed by that if I took it away from you, it would upset you very, very much? And I know what it is, and I'm not going to say it, but you know what it is too. You watch. You watch. In all things, Heinz, in all things, I don't want you to be that little boy in Switzerland. You know his story? With his cloud?
Yeah.
You know his story?
Yeah.
Well, this little boy, he was the son of a doctor, and his mother was a painter and so forth, and very, very dark, dreary paintings, red and blacks, you know, oh my. And then they tended toward the Italian of the Swiss that they were. And so they asked Ellen and I to come over and talk to their son, who was perhaps 8 years old, something like that. And he had an older brother, about 10. So we went to see him. And we talked to him for quite some time. And we said, tell me about your friend. This black cloud. It's always in my mind. No matter what I'm doing, it's always in my mind. And so we said to him, now, would you like to get rid of that guy? No. So we helped him. And we worked with him for a considerable time. And he got rid of the black cloud. Poof, gone. But you see, when he had the black cloud, he was a nasty little boy. And the children in school learned to dislike him. And his brothers and his mother and father learned to tolerate him because he had that black cloud. And when he didn't have the black cloud, they didn't recognize he didn't have the black cloud. They expected him to act as he'd acted before when he had the black cloud. And so they alienated him from himself and them. And the kids in school didn't play with him, and his brother didn't play with him, and his parents didn't have anything to do with him, you know. They treated him like a piranha. And so we talked with the doctor again, and he said, the black cloud came back. And so we went to talk to the boy, and we said, hey, what's going on here? I thought you got rid of that guy. And then he said, I invited him back. He was my only friend. He was the only one I could talk to, the only one who would listen to me. He was my friend, you see? So we want to be real careful that we don't create ourselves possessed by needing friends, possessed by needing circumstances in life, because when we do that, then we create ourselves re-enjoying experiences of the past that we don't need. So I'm transfigured. I expressed my original purity and integrity. The boy was transfigured, really he was, just joyously. But his world that he expected to embrace him and take him didn't. And we didn't talk to him about that. We didn't presume or understand that might happen. Now we would think, you know, more seriously when we do counseling work. But that was not in our mind. And so we didn't prepare him to be so lovable and so likable that he didn't want anybody to be his friend. He was just a friend to everybody. He would just be a friend to everybody and go to everybody and do nice things for them. What do you want to do? Why are you doing these nice things for me? That's me. Because I like doing nice things. All right, you know. How come you gave me your bike? Well, because you're a nice guy. And I know you don't have a bike and you'd like one. Well, man, that's big. Great. Thank you. You know, and then he goes and tells the other kids, how come you gave me your baseball, your football, your soccer ball? How come you gave them to me? Well, because you're very, very good at it, and I'm not very good at all, and I like to watch you. Do you mind? No, 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 no. You have a free ticket to all my games. So just come along. You see, it's how you approach it. And if we could have talked to him in that way, he would not have needed to let the cloud come back into his life. Mm. And we have to remember that as we talk to people. In fact, that was our season for problems like that. We had 2 years in which we would go to Italy and Switzerland and Germany, and we had every type of problem that you could imagine. Mental, what is that, St. Vitus dance, and palsy and epilepsy and cancer and broken bones, and my goodness, we had the laundry cart of it, you know, not just the laundry list, but the laundry cart loaded with all that garbage. And we worked with each one. Maybe 2/3 of it was in Munich, and 1/3 of it was in Lugano. It may have seemed like more than 1/3, but it was only 1/3. And I worked very strongly with all those people. And they're all dedicated friends to this day. It's really wonderful. So, I am transfigured. I express my original purity and integrity. I am transfigured. I express my original purity and integrity. I am transfigured. I express my original purity and integrity. Let's close our eyes for a moment. Let's listen to our inner still voice when I am done speaking. And let's recognize that it has something to say to us. It has something very wonderful and very powerful to say to us. And we make ourselves receptive to that by listening. by being peaceful, by being gentle with ourselves, by being loving. So join me in that sense of lovingness, that sense of peacefulness, that sense of allness. For this is who you are. And I bless each one of you with the awareness of your imminent transfiguration. I love you.